You're listening to The Rush with Resh Minair and Scott MacArthur on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
All right, we've been looking forward to this conversation all afternoon. Typically, he is Judge Krause taking us to entertainment court, and that is going to happen shortly. But first, we want to say hi to Richard Krause. Yes, Richard Krause, the person out of character who's somewhere along King Street, I'm presuming. TIFF is in full go. Where are you?
Actually, I've come home just to change my suit, because as it turns out, for the last couple of years, I haven't had to wear a suit. And I chose poorly today. It's a little I was wearing one that I was I felt like one of those boil in the bag entrees. So I had to come home and change the suit. So I thought I'd get this done today.
Yeah, you were sous-vided out there. It's hot.
That's right.
It feels like 32 in the humidity.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's great for TIFF, but it's not good if you got to wear a tie. How are you feeling with TIFF back in Toronto?
It's really exciting. You know, I went to the opening night film yesterday, The Swimmers, which is this incredible story of two sisters from Syria who had aspirations to swim for Syria in the Olympic Games. The war happens and they decide, we have to get out of here if this is ever going to happen for us. Get to Germany where at least we'll be safe, and then we can bring the rest of our family over. And it is an absolutely harrowing refugee story with some absolutely incredible filmmaking. There's images in here that you will see and not soon forget. So that's really cool. Seeing the movie is really cool. Then they bring out the two young women, the sisters, who play the sisters in the film. Very cool to see these new, fresh-faced actors we've never seen before. And then they bring out the real sisters. And it brought the house down. It was absolutely incredible to be there in a packed house at the Princess of Wales Theater and have that happen in front of us. It was one of those moments that just felt magical in the way that only TIFF can really create.
What else is on the docket for you, Richard? I know you've got an incredibly busy weekend.
Yeah, well, I've been seeing all sorts of stuff already, so I'm a bit ahead of the game, but I'm looking forward to interviewing Brendan Fraser. He has a movie here called The Whale. This is his first leading role in 10 years, and he plays a 600-pound man with congestive heart failure who knows he's probably only going to live a few more days, and he tries to reconnect with his estranged daughter. And it's extremely powerful. It got a six-minute standing ovation at Venice that brought Brendan Fraser to tears. I can't wait to see what people think of it here. I've seen it already. I'll review it a little bit later in the week when it comes up, but I'm looking forward to talking to him. Looking forward to interviewing Laura Dern. She has a film here with Hugh Jackman called The Son, which is a really powerful look at a family trying to deal with the mental illness of their one and only son. And, you know, lots more. The Triangle of Sadness is an absolutely mind-bender of a movie. And it won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival in May. It's playing here now. I'm interviewing the director of that in a few days. And I just want to get inside that guy's head and figure out what he was thinking, because this is social satire of the absolute highest kind. And I'm very curious to meet him. And I'm interviewing the director of the David Bowie movie, Moon Age Daydream. And anyone that knows me that I'm the biggest David Bowie fan in the world. So there's a guy whose head I want to crawl inside for a while, because the movie is absolutely fantastic. Gave me an understanding of David Bowie that I've never had, and I've been a fan since I was like 9 years old. So lots coming up this weekend.
Oh, so much to look forward to, Richard. And I'm glad. Okay, so you're home, you're getting out of the sticky suit, and let's put on the robe. Let's put on the robe and let's get
I'm just putting on another suit, but
now,
yes,
time for entertainment court. It's time for entertainment court.
Order in the entertainment court. Let's get judging.
See, court is now in session.
You've got robe and gavel right now.
That's right. I've got robe and gavel over my suit. So the TV Academy has notified nominees for the Primetime Emmys that they were able to pre-submit 350 characters of thank yous. So instead of standing up on stage and fumbling through and finding that sweaty little piece of paper that everyone seems to want to pull out, unfold it, and then read a list of names that mean absolutely nothing to the studio audience and to the audience at home, they're saying, we're going to put your thank yous on the screen next to you. So imagine like CP24. There'll be the main frame, which will be the speech, and then there'll be a little list running down the side. And that way, the Primetime Academy says, you know, you can be heartfelt. You can be genuine. You're not just listing off a bunch of names. And so the question here is, are the speeches the best part or the worst part of any award show? And the worst part meaning, do they make any sense if you're just listing off a bunch of names that nobody cares about?
Well, I think they're important for the individual who wins the award, who wants to pay tribute to the director, the producer, the castmates, the people behind the scenes, maybe their representation and family members. I'm okay if there's a time limit. Like, have an idea of the half dozen or so names that you want to throw into your little acceptance speech and then move off the stage. When the music has to blare up to give you a hint to get off the stage, that's when they're a problem. I would not call them the best part. I don't know if I'd call them the worst part either. I just would prefer that they be quick.
They are the worst. And just listening to Scott list off all of the things someone would include in a speech just bored me out of my mind. I think they are the worst and I don't want to hear them. I like to see their reaction. I don't need to hear them.
I love the idea of putting the thank yous in text on the screen. Last year at the Emmys, while accepting the award for Outstanding Director for a Limited or Anthology Series or Movie, the Queen's Gambit creator, Scott Frank, droned on forever. He thanked people no one outside of the industry has ever heard of and actually waved off his send-off music, not once, not twice, but three times while reciting an endless list of names, the length of which rivaled the Magna Carta. Not only was it boring and way too long, but it took away valuable time from other potential winners and fellow winners. On a more practical note, there have been a lot of times that winners, in a fit of nerves, have forgotten to thank the most important people in their lives. Hilary Swank forgot to mention her then-husband Chad Lowe in 2000 when she won an Oscar for Best Actress for Boys Don't Cry, and Sean Penn won an Oscar for Milk, and he mentioned equal marriage rights, his career resurgence, and fellow Best Actor nominee Mickey Rourke, and even thanked his best friend and longtime circle of support. But his wife, Robin Wright, was not one of the names mentioned. So put the names in advance so you don't leave anybody out, and that is my verdict.
All right, Judge Krause, what's our next case?
So Kanye West, a little while ago, posted on Instagram that Friends was just simply not funny. That was essentially the push and pull of the post. And it prompted a pretty funny response from Courtney Cox. So West said he didn't actually find any of this series funny. So Courtney Cox, in response, said, I bet you the old Kanye thought Friends was funny, and then captioned the post, misspelled his name, and then played one of his songs, Heartless, on it, which I thought was a good comeback. So the question is Kanye West right when he says that Friends was never funny?
Yeah, now I think he's going to say Courtney Cox hates black people in her response, because that's what he does, right? I think he's right. And you know what? This is a bigger discussion, Richard, among people who are not white, because that's what Friends showed you, that people in New York have circles of friends that are all white. And if you're not white, you can't get the jokes. And I'm sorry, but it's true. I did not find it funny. I liked Seinfeld. I didn't like Friends.
And also, you could live in really expensive apartments, and it just didn't seem to reflect reality. My answer to this question, and it comes back to the Seinfeld versus Friends thing, is, Richard, I could sit with you all afternoon and bore you to tears with my Seinfeld imitations and my recollections of specific scenes from multiple Seinfeld episodes. Nothing about Friends stands out in my mind. Nothing about Friends stands out in my mind.
Here's what I'm going to say. Humor is subjective, and a noted funny man, Kanye West, is completely within his rights to have an opinion on Friends or anything else, because there is no scale for humor. When I think of Friends, I don't think of the funny moments. I think of the cultural impact, the hairstyles, the catchphrases, and Ross and Rachel, the definitive kind of will they, won't they relationship of the 1990s. I think of the cast and the dozens of copycat hangout comedies with ensemble casts about young, attractive singles that Friends spawned. I think of the catchy theme song and, like you said, Scott, the giant New York City apartments they could afford despite rarely ever working. So Kanye, 28 years after Friends debuted, the mere fact that we're still talking about it proves that it left behind a massive cultural impact, whether it was funny or not, and that is my verdict.
Judge Krause, you're Richard Krause again. Get back to Tiff and enjoy it.